It seems only yesterday I was singing the praises of Trove, the splendid initiative by the National Library. For anyone interested in history, it's terrific. It's a digital platform for over 375 million books, articles, newspapers, maps and archives that you can search from the comfort of your home, even in your PJs. Now, dear listeners, this treasure trove is under threat. More budget cuts or efficiency dividends, as the government likes to call them, are placing increasing pressure on the National Library's ability to maintain and develop this amazing resource. Now, as an example, one of our listeners pointed out to us that our story about Randolph Stowe reminded him of another West Australian author from that era, Gerald Gaskin. So I thought we'd put Gerald's name into Trove and see what we could find. And in a matter of seconds, bingo, Trove found 2 books, 5 journal articles, 1 sound recording, 1 photo, 3 diaries, personal papers, 29 newspaper articles, and 10 archived websites. Now, the newspaper articles and websites available online and directed you to where other resources could be found. The first newspaper article I opened is about him threatening to renounce his citizenship if customs don't return his copy of Portnoy's complaint, which was confiscated under our loony censorship laws. So you already know so much about him, and in a matter of seconds you'll want to know more. If that wasn't enough to convince you about why we should care about Trove, I'm joined by Tim Sherritt, Associate Professor of Digital History at the University of Canberra. And Sherritt, of course, is a wonderful name given this subject. He's a former manager of Trove. And sitting opposite me is my old copper, Peter Fitzsimons, journalist extraordinaire, author of over 27 books. Well, that was last week. I think it'll be up to 30 by Friday, many of them covering major events in history. But to you first, Tim, for those not familiar with Trove, tell us how it works.
Okay. Officially it's called a discovery service, but, you know, it hardly does it justice, as you've already really described. I mean, what we're talking about is, well, the most well-known part is the digitized newspapers, and I think it's up close now to 200 million digitized newspaper articles. That's from 1803 onwards. And the full text is there and it's searchable. It's just an astonishing resource. And those 200 million articles are drawn from 1,000 different titles. So it's not just, you know, the big metropolitan newspapers. We're also talking about small country newspapers. We're talking about community newspapers, religious papers, political papers. So it really is an astonishingly rich resource. But that's only, you know, that's the most well-known bit of Trove. But the other bit of Trove is what I like to call the collection of collections, because Trove works with organisations all around the country, archives, libraries, museums, universities, government departments, research agencies, and it brings their collections into Trove to make them more easily discoverable. So it brings all this wonderful content to the surface, and is the first place for people to go if they're interested in researching any topic relating to Australia.
We should point out that the Nat Library never got specific funding to develop Trove. They did it from within their own limited budgets, a triumph of innovation and efficiency, but that's not being recognised by the bean counters.
No, they're sort of being punished for it now, really. It was a case where the National Library saw that this sort of service was necessary and so started developing it. And of course, now with these continual efficiency dividends, i.e. cuts, it's got to the point where, you know, it's cutting so deep into the operations of the library that it's starting to have an impact on Trove. I think it's really important to make a bit of a noise at this point to say that, you know, we just can't carry on with these continual cuts.
Now, Peter, you are closer to history than Abbott was to Credlin.
Please.
You love history, don't you?
I love Australian history, particularly.
Have you used it much when researching your own 35 books?
Well, I work with 4 or 5 researchers who use it very heavily, and I use it a lot. And when I first started at the Sydney Morning Herald in 1986, the great pleasure was to go to the Fairfax Library and you'd say, could I have the folder on Azaria Chamberlain, please? And they'd give you all the cuts. And that went on till about, I reckon, 2008, 2009. And now the point of Trove is anybody that wants to research anything, it's there and you can see it. And as you say, it's digitalized. And the great joy of it is, if you wanted to say what was the reaction on the front page of the Sydney Morning Herald on November the 12th, 1975, the day after the dismissal, not only can you see a facsimile, you can see what the page actually looks like, but over on the left is the digital every word written by Ian Frickberg on how he did it. And it when you also talk about the National Library, it's wonderful. I don't quite know how they managed to do it on a smaller budget as they did. But the wonderful thing is that the community that uses Trove, it's a real community that you go in and there's a computer version of, you know, they read the page. And once you can correct it as you go along. So my researchers, after they, if I'm really doing something like on Wen Mawson, for example. So it's all there on Douglas Mawson, the book I did on Mawson. So when he left, there was the account in the Hobart Mercury. When he gets back, there is the account. And so my researchers go through with a magnifying glass and they correct what the computer account of it is and they leave it behind pristine and beautiful.
Peter, when you're not writing about history, you're trying energetically to make it. I refer, of course, to the Republic. Imagine what a resource it must be able to go back in all the arguments and argy-bargy for 100 years.
I'm doing that right now. I mean, the fascinating thing about the issue of the Republic is, as you know, Philip Adams, I think you were aren't you the founding father, one of the four or five founding fathers in 1991? With the Republic, the fascinating thing about that, and I am doing a book on the Republic, it won't surprise you, but the thing about it is that the notion of inevitability, every time the Republic comes up to this day, people say, it's inevitable, it's going to happen. And the answer to that is, no, it's bloody well not going to happen. It's not going to happen unless we make it happen. And if not us, who? And if not now, when? And we're making it happen. We've quintupled our numbers in the last year. Let me hear you say, hey, Philip. Let me go, here you go. Hey, you're with us, brother.
Tim, this must be something that you're finding, that historians spend less time searching and more time analysing what Trove provides.
Yeah, I mean, I argue that, you know, really Trove has had a really profound impact on the nature of historical practice in Australia, and I don't think we quite understand what that impact is yet. But, you know, it's clear that there's, you know, there's the convenience factor, as you said before, you know, the doing your research in your pyjamas. And, you know, I blame many months looking at microfilms in my past on my bad eyesight. But it's also the fact that, you know, we have this diversity of sources within the newspapers. So it's, not just, as I said, the metropolitan papers. And it gives you this chance to really pick up on the sort of small slivers of everyday life, which, you know, aren't necessarily going to be documented in other sources.
Is it possible to make links to, say, what's left of the archives at the ABC to find images, moving images, as well as the printed page?
Well, I mean, that's, as I said, I mean, Trove's a collection of collections, and the team there will work with, you know, all sorts of organisations to bring their content in. Trove has brought in, for example, many of the program details from Radio National, in fact. So there's, last I looked, there was over 200,000 records from Radio National, including current affairs programs, which are indexed at the segment level. So each segment broadcast on that day are available and searchable through Trove. So it gives you this really rich picture of, what's happening in Australia over the last, 10 or 15 years.
Now, Peter, you're one of the users that have corrected 120 million lines of text. So it's a living thing like Wikipedia.
That's right. That's it. It's a living, breathing thing, and there is a real sense of community. And far be it for me to suggest, to the government, I love that line that everybody, in terms of economies and treasurers, everybody is in favour of general economies and specific expenditure, that nobody wants the cut to come on their patch. But if the government is looking for efficiencies, well, there's no more efficient thing than Trove, because Trove joins up all these collections, and it provides the accessibility of Australia so that you can go into the archive in Perth, into the archive in Melbourne, into all over the country from your living room, in your gym jams, with your Vegemite toast. You have the access. So there is no more efficient thing. It's as a cultural institution, it opens up the entire world to you.
I'm concerned that the budget cuts that the public library are going to suffer, the National Library rather, is going to lead to some dozens of people getting the bullet. Let me ask you this, Tim. Does it need human beings to run it, or is it now down to those clever algorithms?
It certainly needs human beings to run, yeah. The team that I managed was 6 or 7 people, and we supported the users of Trove, so all our wonderful people who are doing our text correction and all sorts of other things on Trove. But also, as I said, working with other organisations in order to get their content into Trove, you know, whether they're small, like we always like to use the example of the Bega Pioneers Museum, who I think at last account had about 42 items in Trove. So this sort of wonderful small collection documenting the dairy industry, up to, you know, national institutions, state libraries. So the team is always sort of trying to work with those sorts of people, and that's an area which has been flagged for being cut back, that there will be now no new organisations brought into Trove unless there's some sort of source of funding attached to them. So that means that, you know, essentially that sort of wonderful collection of collections is going to sort of come to a standstill. And that's a real tragedy. And it's, you know, as I said, you know, it's a really important time for us to say that this is something really important that we value. And we've seen that on social media in the last fortnight. We've had about 8,000 tweets from people who are talking about the value of Trove, why it's important to them.
I did a few. Peter did some.
Yeah. 4,000 of them came from me.
let me ask you this, Peter, although probably it's a question that should go to Tim. Surely this is used internationally as well?
Well, yes, it is internationally, and obviously researchers from overseas, but I recently, the book I'm doing at the moment on Villers Bretonneux about the Paris gun, that it's a staggering account of the Germans had a gun that could fire a missile 80 miles. So it was the first time. So I sent my researcher, Libby Effney, you know, I said to her, please find out. So she went to the French version of Trove. But I stand to be corrected, Tim. I think Australia leads the world in this kind of community technology, do we not? Didn't the National Library lead the way? And another reason to preserve the budget, to say Australia can be really proud of this.
Tim?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, the newspapers in particular has been recognised as a world leader in terms of its innovation and the crowdsourced correction of the text. And Trove generally, I mean, it's one of a series of like services around the world, together with the Digital Public Library of America, with Europeana across Europe. It's recognised up there as one of the international leaders in providing these sorts of digital services for its, you know, innovation and the incredible service it provides.
What's the budget? Well, how much does it cost to run it, roughly?
Look, I don't actually know. But it's not much. You know, we're talking about salaries and servers.
I'm guessing it costs about the fin of a Collins submarine, am I right?
Something like that, I would reckon. Yeah. There's a number of other issues around this too. You know, it's not just the efficiency dividends, because as we've seen today, there's been statements come out from the Australian Academy of the Humanities and from the peak bodies in the libraries, archives and museum sector, really talking about Trove as a crucial piece of national research infrastructure.
Peter, so, have you heard any noise from Her Majesty's opposition?
No, I have not yet. But it'd be a good one for Labor to get behind, would it not? ALP to say tobacco? Because I can't believe when it actually comes to it, Scott Morrison's actually going to take the red pen and actually do serious slashing. Do we think that's really going to happen? I mean, the people would rise. Everybody in the academic community, of whom I don't number myself, to be sure, and I don't really number myself in the historian community, but I'm a storyteller, and all the stories are there. And I think it'd be a shocking political move to really hurt it.
Well, Tim's right, because Trove is a national research infrastructure, like a telescope is to an astronomer or a microscope to scientists, because it helps you find the details that tell you so much about society. And in the program that we devoted to the subject, we had a young historian who just came on the program and demonstrated the miracle that it was in helping him write an extraordinarily original historic book.
It's all there. All the information is there. And what Trove is, I mean, all that information has always been there in dusty folders. And I speak particularly, Tim, to the newspaper stuff, but it's always been there in dusty folders. And the revolution of Trove is to have it at your fingertips in 2 seconds flat, all digitalised, all there. It is a modern wonder.
Okay, I'm going to wind up this discussion but keep Peter on for a few minutes to discuss Republican issues, but I should point out that there are currently petitions going to the minister responsible, that's Mitch Fifield, as well as Twitter and Facebook campaigns, to save Trove, at Save Trove. Do you think, gentlemen, there's a chance that the minister will hear the call? Peter?
I certainly hope so. I'll put a thing in my not that my column counts for a lot, but anyway, I want to beat the drum whatever I can in media, and I think so many journalists around the country will beat the drum on that because it's a really important cultural institution.
Tim?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, as I said, you know, we're at this point where this wonderful outpouring of support for Trove, I think, is really important to make people aware of its value in so many contexts. You know, it changes lives in some situations. So I think given that sort of constant nibbling away at budgets from the efficiency dividend, it's time for us to say, look, this is important. And, you know, we've got to make sure, we've got to preserve this, we've got to develop it, we've got to make sure that it continues to grow.
Tim Sherritt, Associate Professor of Digital History at the University of Canberra, thanks for your contribution to our little wireless program. And Peter, stick around because I have been very impressed with the way you've re-energised the whole Republican debate. It did seem dormant, it seemed... Well, exhausted. It seemed to be just repeating itself and getting less and less optimistic as young royals seem to seduce the younger people.
They call us butter because we're on a roll. We're moving fast. We're having meetings all the time. We're getting things underway. We'll be making a huge announcement in a couple of weeks. But it's been fantastic. I mean, the number of people that have come forward and offered their help and said, let's do this. And the stars are aligned for the Republican movement. As you know, the Prime Minister is a very serious Republican. I've had experience of that, the level of his passion. Bill Shorten, the opposition leader, is a Republican. All six premiers, both chief ministers, the Chief Justice of the High Court. I mean, you point to
me... I think you should point that out. A lot of listeners will not be aware that all the premiers put their hands up.
Well, there was one that didn't sign the document that I presented for Australia Day, said he would but didn't, doesn't matter. But doesn't matter, he's a Republican. Even Colin Barnett, Premier Colin Barnett, in fact, to be fair, when I was told by his office that he would, he didn't say he would. But anyway, he's a very strong Republican. He just didn't want to sign the document because I think he was naming Queen Elizabeth Key in the Swan River that day. Sorry, I still can't get my head quite around that one. But anyway, the point is, in the 90s, you had serious conservative voices like John Howard, like Tony Abbott, who were, you know, respected figures who, on the conservative side of politics, who said, not now, not ever. Well, right now, on the conservative side of politics, I mean, one of the most famous conservative politicians in the land is Christopher Pyne. There is no more eloquent, no more passionate Republican in the country than Christopher Pyne. He'd bring it to you to a glass of...
We are not a monolithic movement. There are quite passionate disagreements.
Yes, there are, and that is one of the challenges. And so the challenge we have is that I, for example, am a very strong minimalist. And so my model can fit inside a tweet. Current system, Prime Minister chooses the Governor General, then he asks the Queen of England, is it okay? Which is another way of saying the democratically elected leader of the Australian people in the 21st century is still reduced to writing a letter to an unelected English lady and saying, is it all right with your unelected Englishness, what I have decided to do. The new model that I propose and minimalists propose is Prime Minister chooses the Governor General, then he asks the Parliament of the people and we're done. And we still call it the Governor General and we still call ourselves the Commonwealth of Australia and we get on with our lives. The direct electionist, there's various models in that. And the challenge this time, and it's a real challenge, is what we need to do is to have a plebiscite for the Australian people and ask the question, do you think Australia should be a republic? We will romp home with between 60 and 70%. We then work out which between us, the Australian people, which is the model that we want. We have the debate. And the challenge this time, we won't do what we did in 1999. I, for example, will argue very passionately for the minimalist. A man like Peter Beattie will argue very strongly for direct election. But this time we all agree, nobody takes their bat and ball and goes home. We commit ourselves to Australian democracy. What the Australian people decide is what we do.
As you know, there's an enormous amount of conflict within the Indigenous community about constitutional recognition. Mm-hmm. And that conflict has really taken the energy, it's certainly taken, it's got it on the back burner instead of the front burner. I don't think that arguments are bad, but it would be terrific if you could sort these conflicts out.
And I don't think, in terms of Malcolm Turnbull, many people ask me about Malcolm Turnbull and question his devotion to the Republic. And the answer is, I probably did him a disservice when I said Christopher Pyne was the most passionate Republican in the country, because Malcolm Turnbull is an extremely devoted Republican. But I accept that at the moment, you know, going into this next election, he's not a prime minister in his own right. He hasn't been elected. We would expect more from him after the next election, not so much at this side of the election. But the news, I mean, we have money pouring into our coffers. We have membership soaring. We are, as I mentioned, we're five times the membership this time, right now, as we were this time last year. We've got serious ad agencies coming forward offering their help. I had a meeting with GetUp the other day. Geez, they're an impressive crowd, GetUp, too.
My daughter works for GetUp.
Well, gee, they're impressive. And they're a seriously slick political organisation with extraordinary resources. To have those kind of people with us, the Sydney Morning Herald behind us. Did you see the coverage of the Daily Telegraph? Was when we announced the premiers and chief ministers, the telly had this fabulous front page, the United States of Australia, and they had an editorial backing it. Their commentariat were behind it. I mean, it was stunning stuff.
I've been a member of the AusFlag board for a long, long time. Do you also want to change the flag as I do?
Well, I just have to take my bandana off and put a new bandana on here, because I am on the board of AusFlag. I love the idea of changing our flag, but the Australian Republican Movement, and it's an important distinction, the Australian Republican Movement steers by one star. We want to have an Australian as our head of state. We have no view whatsoever on the flag. If you ask me as a member of the Board of AusFlag...
I'm just asking you this in private because no one's listening.
You bloody beauty. Of course I do. And we look to New Zealand. I've done a lot of media in New Zealand lately. And I tell them that wonderful line. I've always loved it. I quote it everywhere. Jerry Seinfeld, when he came to Australia in the year 2000, he said, "I love your flag. Great Britain at night." They like that one in New Zealand too.
Good on you. Peter Fitzsimons, journalist and author extraordinaire, and these days our most energetic promoter of the Republic. That's a wrap from the Little Wireless program. Can we play our new theme out, Michelle? Is that available? Let's listen to our new theme as we go off air. And, of course, tomorrow we'll be back with, I think, Bruce Shapiro.